Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And I was just really like turned off by what I felt was a kind of obsession with money.
All right. Love and money. If you've ever tried to share finances, or even if you've just dated someone with a different approach to money or a different amount of money, you know it can be a minefield. Dealing with money in relationships is always at least a little bit stressful, and that is at best. With me now is Anna Sale, the host of WNYC's podcast, Death, Sex, and Money. The latest episode is out today, and it's all about the money troubles of couples. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Brian.
And let's dive right in with an excerpt. This is Tiffany, a 28-year-old you spoke to, who recently broke off her engagement.
I was engaged to this guy, a really wonderful guy. We met while we were living and working in Israel, and we were talking about the wedding and planning and setting a date, looking at rings. I bought a dress, and then he sent me a Facebook message that said something like, "Oh, and I'm sending you this document, you know, that my parents want, and I'm going to need you to sign it before we get married." I just said something like, "Oh, this is getting like less and less romantic by the day."
Why did he want you to sign a prenup?
Well, first he presented it as something that his parents wanted, and then it became something that he wanted, you know, sign it or we have to break up.
Ooh, Anna, what happened there?
That's Tiffany Harris. She lives in Washington, D.C., and she was one of the first listeners from Death, Sex, and Money when we asked for what stories you want to hear. She sent in a message in her first weeks and said, "Can we talk about prenups?" Because this had just happened in her life, and she was mystified by it. Like, how had this relationship, she'd been with her fiancé for 3 years, they were planning to marry, and then he sends her a Facebook message and is like, "Oh, can you sign this thing?"
Now, prenuptial agreement is like a contract dealing with potential financial outcomes, basically, if you break up.
You break up, and how you're going to resolve those conflicts if you break up.
And I think it's often older people, like in second marriages, or people who have accumulated a lot of money over their lives and then get married, who really, you know, want prenuptial agreements, feel they have cause for them. Why in this case people in their 20s?
Well, in this case, her ex-fiancé had some family money and his parents wanted him to protect it.
Okay.
But it came up out of the blue in this relationship, and it really showed the ways that when we avoid talking about money with our partners when we're in a couple, how it can just totally explode. And our conversation was really interesting. It goes on in the episode because I asked Tiffany, "Don't you think this prompted some conversations that you needed to have for a marriage?"
Good question.
And she was, you know, she said, "Oh, I think if we were married and we'd established some more of a foundation, we could have worked this out down the line, but it just came so quickly."
So, listeners, we have some more of Anna's tape to play from the Death, Sex, and Money podcast about relationships and money, but we can take a few of your stories on the phones as well. What was that aha moment for you in a relationship where you realized you had a money problem that you didn't think you did in your coupling relationship? 212-433-WNYC. And, of course, if you want to tell us that you resolved it well, that might actually help people.
We all need tips, yes.
Right? Because the horror stories are easy. If you resolved it well, that's a bonus. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Were there patterns in terms of who contacted you to open up about their story?
You know, Brian, I was actually really surprised because I was expecting the kind of questions about being totally mystified to be from people who were younger and people who had been in relationships for a long time, for them to have figured out some patterns and some strategies. But what was really interesting for me was hearing from all these listeners in very different life phases and the different questions they were grappling with their partners. Like, one woman contacted me and she has divorced with grown children and totally in love with her boyfriend of 3 years and is also watching her father take care of her mother who has dementia. And it's made her very sensitive to Medicaid eligibility and how they're going to pay for long-term care. And so she and her boyfriend are choosing not to marry because they don't want to complicate that.
Another of the couples you talked to for this episode are a married couple with one child. They used to both work, but when they had their child, one partner stayed home, and one half of the couple, Eric, earned the money and scheduled meetings to talk about it. But his wife, Martha, who stayed home, had trouble with our financial situation for a time. So let's take a listen, excuse me, to about a minute of that. Martha speaks first.
Well, it's funny, too. When I think it was the first Mother's Day that we had after Alba was born, Eric basically had to force me into the car and to the mall to buy new clothes for myself because not contributing financially, I got into this kind of weird headspace where I would refuse to buy things for myself. And I'm a runner, too, and I was in pain running, and he had to kind of force me to go and buy new running shoes because I didn't feel comfortable yet.
So he had to take you to the mall for
yes.
you to make that
yes.
purchase.
He did.
I forgot about how rough that used to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's still... I still kind of have to like roll my eyes and just be like, just go get some
yeah.
pants.
That from the Death, Sex, and Money podcast, a little Death, Sex, and Money theme creeping
in there.
Well, in their case, at least it sounded like they were laughing about it and talking about it in the past tense.
In the past tense, but it also was a story for me about, you know, they were a couple when they got together, when they started sharing expenses, they did the joint checking account that they each contributed a ratio based on what they were earning. They did separate spending accounts that were their separate individual checking accounts, which is something I heard from a lot of people. That's a system a lot of people seem to be using when they both earn. And then when their kid was born, that system just didn't work anymore. Martha has her own separate checking account but isn't earning any money. And it reminded me like, oh gosh, even when you work out how you're going to deal with money in a couple, life keeps happening.
Was there something about his scheduling meetings about money that seemed too businesslike to his wife?
Well, it really was clear talking to both of them, that he was the one who was very concerned about the amount of money they were spending and was very strict on their budgeting. And so it was interesting to hear their dynamic where he's the one who gets really nervous about spending. And so she reacted by kind of quietly and just not really realizing it, stopping spending money on herself.
Depriving herself.
Exactly.
Well, you want to hear some more stories?
Yes, please.
Remy on the Upper West Side. You're on WNYC. Hello, Remy.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
So my husband and I were out to dinner last weekend for our once-a-week date night, and we, several years ago, set up an irrevocable trust for our children. And he told me he's been thinking about revisiting that because he doesn't want the children to inherit so much money that they do not have to work. I'm completely on board with the idea of that, but something in me kind of... clenched at the idea because the whole family has had to sacrifice in order for him to reach the level of success that he's reached. You know, they don't see him from Sunday evening to Friday afternoon because he's working and just little things. And I don't think we're yet at that level where we need to worry, but he thinks that it will be an issue within the next few years. And I kind of felt like he was buttering me up for that moment.
Now Anna, you've been doing the reporting on this, so what do you want to ask Remy?
Well, it's interesting how you use the word clench because it gets at how sort of deep our reactions to these conversations can be. But what did you say? Where did you leave it?
I said that I grew up, I wouldn't say, you know, deprived, but definitely lower middle class, so money was an issue in my family. And I chose a career that I didn't necessarily love because I knew it was lucrative. And I said, I don't want my children to have to do that. I want my children to choose something that they feel passionately about, whether or not it's lucrative. But I would like them to be able to fall back on, you know, our family funds so they can provide the best education for our grandchildren. And, I mean, this is years off. They're toddlers. But I think that that's why I reacted so strongly, just because I don't spend extravagantly because I have that, you know, kind of frugal path behind me. So,
and this came up on date night.
Yes. So romantic.
All right. And it might be a while before the next date night. Remy, thank you and good luck. Roxana in Holland, Pennsylvania. You're on WNYC. Hi, Roxana.
Hi. I am an immigrant professional woman who have worked for many years and for Citibank. And I had businesses with my husband. And now I'm going through a very contentious divorce, and I never had a prenup. Not only did I not have a prenup, I allowed my husband 22 years ago to form a family limited partnership where he is general partner and I am limited partner. And I pretty much said, oh, honey, fine, the children are safe, it's okay, and I signed it. And now, earlier, 3 weeks ago, he emptied out all the family limited partnership accounts and left me stranded with nothing, and I have to go and fight him in court to get what is mine.
So this is
I have to insist on my sons, who are now going to inherit when I die, whatever it is left, that they must have a prenup as a condition of their inheritance.
So this is a divorce horror story. What kind of prenup do you think could have prevented the situation from getting to this point that you could have anticipated so long ago?
I could have at that point said, no matter what kind of family limited partnerships we form, in case that we split up, I still get half without having to go to court, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, where he now wants my inheritance, appreciation of the properties that I have inherited in Bangladesh from my father and mother, he wants half of that. And the prenup would then say, any property that you have inherited from your parents, appreciation through the marriage is not subject to division.
Yes.
You keep yours, I keep mine.
Yes, Roxana, good luck to you. And so, Anna, we have now one story of, I wish we had a prenup, and your earlier story of, what do you mean you want a prenup?
Yeah, that's what's so interesting about these stories is that it's like we don't talk about money in our relationships. And it gets at this very core question of how do you negotiate taking care of yourself, taking care of your partner, and then figuring out what the terms are of your relationship. And when we don't talk about that, we're not setting boundaries, guidelines, expectations for the principles around your family. And so I think that's what was so exciting about having these listeners come in with stories about how they've navigated money in their relationships, because it was like the ones who'd figured out a way, systems for the ways they were going to figure out what they were going to save money for, and ways, things that they were going to spend money for together. It was like they'd cracked this code together because they felt like nobody else was talking about this with them.
And even people who you would think would know better, your podcast last week with the great Dan Savage, the relationship advice columnist, and he said the hardest thing to talk about with his husband is money.
He said it was money. And for him, and this is something that came up again and again and again, for him, he immediately talked about the way he grew up in his family. They didn't have a lot of money, and he doesn't like watching a lot of money being spent. And he made very clear, in my marriage, I'm the breadwinner and I watch my husband spend a lot of money. And that's what we fight about. We don't fight about sex. We fight about money.
Jill in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Anna Sale, host of the Death, Sex, and Money podcast. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
So what happened to you?
So I was dating a guy for, it was about a year and a half into the relationship when money had come up a couple times where I remember him mentioning that he thought that I always wanted to go to fancy dinners and things like that. And we had an argument one night, actually, on New Year's, where it was the bill was pretty high. But then when he actually met my mom, he met my parents at one point, that's when things sort of started to change, where he ended up saying, like, I think that you're a lot like your mom, and that my mom has never really worked. She's been a housewife. And I sort of grew up upper middle class, and I think he grew up sort of lower middle class. So that's when the issue started to sort of become more apparent to me, that it was an issue in our relationship.
Let me try to understand it. The aha moment was when he met your mother, thought you were like her, and was it that he wanted you to go on a professional track rather than plan to stay home and take care of kids?
not necessarily that, but he noticed that my mother sort of depended on my dad for a lot of things and demanded things from my dad. And that's what he was afraid of, was just that he felt like he couldn't provide that those kinds of things for me.
So, honey, you say, honey, you stay home and take care of the kids. I'll go out and get a job, and you can depend on me. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Jill, thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's something that I didn't expect, was hearing from people who earned more in their relationship, that ambivalence about what that meant from women and men. For women, it was, you know, it's great that I earn three times more and I am doing really well in my career, but I don't really know if I want to sign up to have that responsibility in this relationship for the rest of our relationship. And then hearing from men the question of, am I doing enough? I'm the breadwinner. My dad never talked to me about money. I have a caller who sent in a message who said, I think I'm doing well. I had these things for myself when I was growing up, but I have no idea how much my family earned. And so that question of, am I doing enough as the breadwinner and supporting my family?
We just have a minute left. Do you think that for most people, money troubles are masking other issues in the relationship that are really sort of relationship issues? Or can money troubles alone be that pervasive and infectious that, you know, it independently causes the big problem?
I think it's definitely both. I mean, speaking of my own relationships, I mean, money quickly can get to issues of whether you feel safe and secure and stable together in your relationship. But it's also when it's not talked about in a way that's clear and straightforward and diffused of all the emotion of it, it can become that mask of other struggles about, you know, who has power in the relationship, who's in charge, and how you're dividing responsibilities.
And we leave it there for today. Keep posting your relationship and money stories to our page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Or do you have comments page with the podcast?
Yeah, you can go to deathsexmoney.org and click on the episode page and leave your stories
there.
You
have your own website?
We do.
All right. So you don't have to even go through WNYC. You can go to Death, Sex, and Money.
Death, Sex, Money.
Death, Sex, Money, like one word.
Yes.
.org.
Death.org.
And here, Anna Sales. Series of podcasts. In fact, sign up for them. Anna, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.